False Bottom Girls guides listeners through the wonderful, yet sometimes confusing, world of beer. Hi, my name is Rachel Hudson, and I'm the co-owner and head brewer of Pilot Brewing Company in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I'm also an advanced Cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair. I'm the beer quality and education manager for Orpheus Brewing in Atlanta, Georgia, and I am also an advanced Cicerone. And welcome to our podcast.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to this bonus episode of False Bottom Girls, exclusively for our Patreon subscribers. And if you can't tell already, this is one of those episodes where we drink. I swear I've just started on.
We had a few minutes before we hit record.
Yeah, we're a little when we record in the evening, we're either over it.
I'm definitely over it.
Salty or we're a little hyper because the day is done. But we're not here to talk about that. Today, we are here to talk about Belgian Golden Strong Ale.
Very strong.
Yes. Rachel, do you think that any home brewer has ever brewed this style and called it a Belgian Golden Strong Ale?
No.
I bet Gordon Strong does.
No. I bet he does, but I'm not giving that affirmation.
But so in my head, when we decided on this style, I accidentally said Gordon Strong. And so now every time I go to say Belgian Golden Strong, I have to be like golden.
Yeah.
Golden.
Because that makes more sense.
Right.
But his name is Gordon Strong. Now for, right. Now, would you clarify who he is for our listeners?
Yes. If you are not familiar with Gordon Strong.
Which I was not until like a month ago, FYI. So don't feel bad.
He is the highest ranking BJCP judge in the universe. And the principal architect of the BJCP guidelines. He was the longtime president of the Beer Judge Certification Program until very recently. So that's why I was thinking Belgian Gordon Strong Ale.
It's also why I don't really know who he is, because I haven't really paid attention to BJCP until really I started studying for Cicero.
Yeah, but he's up there in the pantheon of like old homebrew guys like Ray Daniels and Randy Mosher. He is a very accomplished homebrewer and has won like homebrewer of the year. And again, he's the top ranked judge. I mean, when you make the rules, you can put yourself in charge, but he judges very much and has done a lot for the organization. So we are not here to talk about Gordon Strong. No. We're here to talk about Golden Strong.
Much more palatable. Literally.
Yes.
So, man, the coolest thing about this beer, I think, is it was created by a brewery and thus given the style because of this beer that was created by this brewery. And like, I would love nothing more to have Pilot Ale, right? Like, whatever it is, a new style, and it's just like, bam, it's all over the world now because it's so new, it's so great. And I know it took Morgat Brewery a long time to do that, but
right,
I'm just saying, it's a great thing. And so I feel like, all right, so we're talking about Belgian Golden Strong Ale. Duvel is basically the style example, what set this style on its path.
Right.
Duvel was the beer that set the style on the path.
Right. Very much like Pilsner Urquell, Budweiser.
Yes. Pilsner Urquell was the first Czech Pilsner. It set the style on its path. This is the same way, Duvel. So, I mean, it's fucking cool. Like, how you're like, I'm going to open a brewery. We're going to make this beer. Like, now they have a lot of brands, they have a lot of umbrella companies, whatever, but they're like, we're going to make this one beer and we're going to sell it all over the world and everyone's going to love it. And it's going to be a new style. It's like, what?
Right.
I know that wasn't your business plan.
I was going to say, yes. Yeah. I was going to say it's a very Belgian story where they were like, we're going to, and we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but we're going to make this beer in response to what we're seeing consumers wanting, but we're not going to give them exactly what they want in very Belgian style. We're going to do it our way.
Yes.
And that's how we have the Duvel that we have today, which it's, again, it's kind of like talking about Czech Pilsner. You can't talk about Belgian Golden Strong Ale without really a Belgian Golden Strong Ale is Duvel. There are other ones. We're both drinking other versions of it tonight, but it is the yeah. standard for the style.
And there's also other breweries who have gone on to make this style of beer who have named their beer after kind of a devil name. So Duvel does mean devil in
Flemish.
Yeah. So we'll tell you the story in a bit about how it got its name, but there are other breweries that have a similar devil name kind of as an ode to that. Mm-hmm. But
when I was in Belgium, I had a Lucifer that, yes. or no, I'm sorry, a Judas. And okay. I had that. I ordered it specifically because I was like, this is one of those knockoffs. And it's
knockoff. I love it.
And yeah, that isn't very kind of me. I shouldn't call it a
knockoff.
Nobody
can brew Belgian style. Going
right. But it's the style that was then also named. And it's very much like Doppelbach and Salvatore, you know, yes. where it's like all of these breweries started calling it Salvatore. And then they were like, no, that's our beer. And so then the A-T-O-R became the designation that this is what this is kind of honoring or inspired by. And that's very much like Judas, Lucifer, Pirat. Pirat especially is in the exact same kind of bottle as Duvel.
Well, I am drinking.
You've got the big boy.
I'm drinking a Pirat right now. Yeah, I have a big boy. There's also Damnation, Russian River, North Coast Prankster for American styles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Prankster is probably a devilish reference.
Yeah, I've got Delirium Tremens,
which is not a devilish reference.
No,
it's
kind of like a
detox reference.
Yeah, or like a kind of a consumption.
Maybe the devil's come over you.
Right. Reference. Exactly. Yeah. And you know, one of the things I didn't know, and I promise we'll probably focus in a minute, but with Delirium Tremens, when they first released it in the United States, it wasn't allowed to be called Delirium Tremens.
Ah.
Because we're very much, a very hypocritical society.
Yes, where, that's better.
Yeah. It's like you can't say something like Delirium Tremens. That makes us clutch our pearls. And so it had a different name now. And it's always been known to me as Delirium Tremens. So at a certain point, that changed. Somebody was like, all right, America, come on. Come on.
Let's calm down.
Yeah. Let's cut the bullshit and just call it Delirium.
Like half of you are fucking alcoholics anyway. <Right. laughs> Okay. So Duvel started. Well, I should say that's not true. Duvel just started way after the brewery started. So Morgat Brewery in Belgium was founded in 1871. It was a small little brewery. Well, at first it was a brewery that did little to stand out. And there's probably about 4,000 breweries at that time. It operated much like a farmhouse brewery. It was known for its dark ales. They were not making this like golden ale. So Morgat Brewery was started in Belgium, founded in 1871 by Jan Leonard Morgat. And he eventually handed over to his sons around 1900. And during World War I, English beer styles were leaving their mark on Belgium. So we see this, like a lot of Belgian brewing is inspired from English beers. As you could see, if you start to study like Belgian history, but this was not different from that. And in 1918, the brewery released a dark beer influenced by English brewery named Victory Ale. And this was to celebrate the end of World War I. Well, Victory Ale was special in itself because it used a yeast strain that was isolated from a Scottish ale beer. So there's a couple of different versions of the story of how one of the sons, his name was Albert, obtained this yeast strain. But apparently Albert traveled to the UK searching for the source of this yeast that would bring him closer to an English ale beer. So he's making a dark ale and he's looking for this English ale yeast strain. A lot of the Belgian brewers weren't a fan of this. You know, they didn't really agree. They're like, what are you crazy? Why are you doing this? We have what we need here. And UK brewers were suspicious of him.
This is gives me just a diversion kind of idea that we should expand on possibly in a future podcast episode. But I hadn't really realized the connection between like Belgian brewing and like Scotch ales until I learned it from you in the episode we did on Scotch ales. And I know that's spoilers, we're going to get there, but it would be really interesting to really explore that interaction history, between English brewers and Belgian brewers, because Belgian brewers were the ones who were thought to bring hops to England. And then England became like this major grower. Yeah. So like there's a couple of, you wouldn't immediately be like, make this connection that England and Belgium really relied on each other a whole lot or influenced each other a whole lot. You know, it's like there's websites created to tell you if England and France were at war in any given year. So you don't like Belgium often gets overlooked. But this is, so this is just another really interesting thing of like Belgians or this specific Belgian wanting to do like this English, you know, a Belgian interpretation of an English beer.
Yeah. And well, I had 2 points. One, we see that with English brewing and brewers from Vienna and Munich, where they went up to understand how they were killing their malt and, you know, understand the new way. And another thing is there's so much history that's kind of lost. And like during these wars, World War I, World War II, and like documents, and there's a little bit of blur of Belgian beer history too, that's hard to really nail down like some of these connections. But it would be interesting to kind of take a dive deep into the relationship. You know, it's kind of like the chicken and the egg.
Right.
You know?
Right. Well, and you always learn very much, particularly if you're doing like Cicerone or even BJCP, like you're learning of English brewing history, German brewing history, Belgian brewing history. And it's like, well, no, but everybody is sharing information and being inspired by each other in different ways. And that's really interesting how interconnected it all really is once you start to like read the history.
Yeah. Look at American brewing history. We're all influenced by the German and Irish immigrants that came over. So it's just like, well, that's America, right? Because we're all immigrants. So yeah, we are, you know, everyone came from a different place, you know, started their family, have their traditions.
Yeah. Well, except for all the indigenous people who lived here before. But.
Well, okay. Yeah, that's true. I'm sorry. It's a very white person thing for me to say. And I apologize. When you start to study brewing, you do learn that it does have a lot of influence on from immigrants. After all that, we'll get back to my little history lesson.
Yes.
So Albert's searching for this Scottish ale yeast drink. There's a couple stories. Like if you look at the Duvel website, it kind of leads you to believe that he was on this great mission, maybe where he stole a bottle of Scotch ale. Michael Jackson, in his book, will say that, well, the Scotch ale was being imported to Belgium, so he just went to the store and bought one.
Right.
But the idea is that he got this bottle of beer and he isolated, well, not just him, but he enlisted a Belgian brewery scientist named Jean de Klerk, who went on to write a textbook of brewing in like 1947.
I have those textbooks. They are not useful to present day gen.
I imagine. Yeah.
But they are and they aren't. You know, there's so much brewing science that was like really figured out.
Yeah.
In like the late 1800s, early 1900s that like hasn't changed. But it's interesting to have. And I think that Jean de Klerk is one of those people who is often he's a scientist, kind of like Emil Christian Hansen, who is, I stan Emil Christian Hansen, like nobody's business, but they, you know, they're often overlooked for how impactful they are because they're the scientists who are, you know, figuring out the microbiology. They're not the swashbuckling brewers dipping fake canes into the wort in England kind of thing.
Well, they're also the first, right? So like people are doubting them. You know, it's like, well, let me see more proof. But so, you know, Albert's like, yo, Jan, help me isolate this yeast. Help me analyze it. Help me figure out what's going on in this yeast tray so we can get the yeast that we want for this beer. So apparently this sample contained somewhere between 10 to 20 different yeast strains. Apparently, you know, this is information we gather.
Right. It was bottle conditioned at the time. So there was still live yeast in the bottle.
So they chose a single strain that they thought had the most potential that they started using for their victory ale. So this is not really Duvel at the time. This beer started as a dark ale named Victory Ale, and they were using this yeast for that beer. And it's still the strain of yeast that they use today.
One of the strains.
A story about the name of the beer there's a couple of different stories that we have researched and found. They're pretty similar, but one of the stories is during a tasting session of the beer, a local shoemaker was so taken by the beer, he shouted out, "This is the real devil." It's 8.5% Belgian Victory Dark Ale at this point. And so it's funny because, you know, I found this story. It's just like, oh, well, I found this story about Michael Jackson saying that a brewer named the beer that was in the tasting session, you know, so.
Whatever.
Whatever.
Yeah. It's kind of like the like steam beer. You know, I learned that it was called steam beer because it was brewed in the San Francisco Bay and like it steam would come off of it. And then other people were like, no, it's like Dampf beer in Germany, because when you tap the cask, the spray would come off. And if you go to Anchor Steam's website, they're like, who knows? Not us.
They should know.
We created this beer style, but we don't know. And so, yeah, it's like, well, whatever. We're here now. Why it's important to keep detailed notes of things.
Everyone. Yes. So you know why your beer is named what it is.
Right.
But so there's a story. There's two stories. You can pick which one you like better.
Right. But it was this is the real devil, because the beer is very high in ABV and it does not taste like it.
No,
and
it's very drinkable.
It doesn't taste like it in terms of, you don't taste the ABV, so you don't have the alcohol burn or alcohol warmth from it. And also it's a very, very light bodied beer. So like if you're having something like a Doppelbock or a barley wine, it is very full bodied. And that tells our brains that this is going to be high ABV. Belgian Golden Strong Ale is not like that. It's very light bodied and the flavor of it does not belie the alcohol strength.
Exactly. And Jen will get more into that, why that's the case. We're talking about ingredients, but I will have
it's to. Magic.
Yeah, it's just magic. I will have to tell you, Pirate is the same way. I am feeling pretty good. And, you know, it doesn't taste like I should be feeling this good. So.
Right. Yes, I do remember. I don't remember very clearly, but I when I ordered the Judas in Belgium, like, you know, we were just stopped at some bar, one of many bars throughout the day. And I was like, oh, totally, I'm going to get this. And like, it comes in a bottle and we're sitting outside. I'm just like, down the hatch. And so I cannot tell you what we did for the rest of that day. I'm sure it involved drinking more beer and like me thinking I was super funny and charming. But yeah, it didn't taste like the ABV level.
And that is how you know you've done it right.
Exactly. I was going to say that is a very good marker of a brewer who truly understands like how high ABV, how to work with a beer that has high ABV.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I don't drink a lot of ABV beers. Cause I
drink a lot of ABV beers.
Everyone knows what I mean. Yeah. It's cool. Sorry, I'm American.
Oh, folks. Next month, our beer style is going to be non-alcoholic beers because we cannot keep it together.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
With high ABV beers.
We could do session beer, but it will have alcohol. All right. So another cool thing, 1960, Duvel decides that they're going to make their own branded glass for their beer. They say they have invented the tulip glass. I'm sure there were other glasses like that around, but you know, whatever, they will stitch that story if you ask them. But the glass is very specific for the Duvel bottle pour.
One of the things that stuck out to me in the Great Beers of Belgium by Michael Jackson is he refers to the Duvel glass as a Burgundy sampler. And he said that Duvel is always served in a Burgundy sampler, which is a tulip glass.
Yes.
But a Burgundy sampler sounds like something that maybe, I don't know, you would ask a sex worker for.
Yeah, sure. So this glass has got a flat bottom, a little stem that you could hold, which is great because you won't warm up your beer. And then it's got this big bulb shape, kind of comes in at the top and then it flares out. And it's very specific for the Duvel bottle pour. So Duvel is very highly carbonated, in the bottle. Yes.
Duvel is one of those ones that anytime somebody has tried to do a blind tasting for me and there's a Duvel, they're just like, well, you know what this is. Yeah. Because it has a giant head that like takes a while to dissipate. And even when it dissipates, you still have all of that nice Belgian lacing on the inside of the glass. Yeah. So you look at it and you're like, yeah, it's Duvel. Like, I don't even have to taste it. I can just look at it and see.
And one of the cool things, or, you know, maybe not cool, depending on, you know, if you're a beer buyer or something, but it's so highly carbonated that they only put it in the bottle. Now they do a version on keg, on draft, that's called Duvel Siegel. It's lower carbonation for sure. And it just tastes like a different beer. And yeah. So if you see Duvel on draft, it's going to be Duvel Siegel.
Oh, that's really interesting. That makes perfect sense. And another thing with the service about Duvel that I think is super interesting is that it is, Duvel specifically is usually served very chilled and also often in a glass that has also been chilled. It's one of the only times that, like, if you get a chilled glass with a very, very cold Duvel, that's actually proper service. So a chilled glass being a glass that was in the refrigerator, not like a frozen mug kind of thing.
Okay. So here is what I have to say about that.
Okay.
All right. So as everyone knows, I was born with all this information. I just came out the womb knowing it. Just kidding. I did not. I watched some videos, and one specifically was, tell me again what it's called, the
Tasting Together. Tasting Together series on YouTube. Fantastic.
So Neil Whitty, who's one of the Master Ciceros, does an episode about Belgian Golden Strong. So I watched that. He also happened to work at Duvel.
Right. Well, he worked at Boulevard for several years. They got acquired by Morgott.
So Neil was telling in this webinar, I was watching, he was telling about how they used to have Duvel pouring contest. So you would go and like everyone, all the bartenders line up and there's a perfect pour. It's called the perfect pour for Duvel. And it involves the Duvel glass with the Duvel bottle because it comes in a bottle and it's not on draft as Duvel. And then, so it was a typical pour that you, if you are familiar with how to pour beer, it's typical with, you know, the 45 degree angle kind of going up to the side. But the idea was like, okay, so here's the word Duvel in the middle of the glass. And the perfect pour would be this nice, you know, beer line that went like right in the middle of the word Duvel. So the rest of it was all foam. So he did this. He never mentioned a cold glass. And he did this with a warm, like a room temperature glass. So that's what makes me like question, like, why, if that was the type of competition they had, like, why is the proper way to give it in a chilled glass?
So this is the connection that I made in my head. There is no scientific backing for this. So maybe this will become part of the lore of Duvel as well. But that's what Michael Jackson has written in his books about Duvel, that it's usually served cooler than cellar temperature and that it's served in a chilled glass. So what I'm wondering is, and we'll talk about how Duvel changed from being a dark strong to a pale strong, but what Morgott was trying to do was respond to the consumer demand for very pale beers, which are traditionally served, if you've ever been to a football stadium,
sure.
or you know, a restaurant, they are designed to be served very, very cold.
Yeah.
A lot of times that's because that numbs your palate so you don't taste the beer, and also so you drink more.
Yeah.
And I wonder then if that was part of the, in the day, if that was part of the strategy for Duvel to appeal to those customers.
Yeah.
For like their making something that looks like what people are used to drinking and looks like those very pale pilsners people are wanting to drink, but they're very high ABV. So maybe part of that, and again, this is just me hypothesizing, but maybe serving it very cold and in a very cold glass is something that consumers expect.
Yeah.
And well, so especially, you know, if you're, that kind of matches that.
Yeah.
We want a pale pilsner type beer. We'll serve it. We'll, you know, it's kind of like give the kids at the playground a free sample of the drugs to get them hooked. And then
no, it definitely makes sense because that's what the highest top selling style of beer in the world is the right. Blight Lager. Right. So like, why not appeal to that, especially when this is your only beer.
Right. So,
but we should probably move on and talk about the difference between the making the beer from dark to golden, which really matches up with this, because during 1970, all the tastes in Europe are changing. Everything's going towards these pale lagers. I mean,
in the world.
Yeah. Not that 1970 is like there's been a lot of time since lager yeast was discovered in between 1970, but like clean, easy drinking lager beer for the masses, you know, Americans that went over to war who are used to the cold, fizzy stuff coming back. Like, this is the new beer. So sales of these dark ales just kind of start to dwindle because, you know, at a certain point, you have a great beer, but you have to focus on marketing, right? And if the market's not taking to your dark ale, what do you do? Shut right. down or change your beer?
Right. And, you know, this is also around the time that organizations like Camera are popping yes. up to preserve that real ale tradition, because everything is moving towards a very industrialized macro lager format.
Yeah. And it happens with kegs too, right? Mm-hmm. So like, everything's cask edition, it comes in barrels, and now we have this keg system, and now we have European kegs and American kegs. And if you want your beer to go to the American market, you got to put in these kegs. They're not going to take your cask, you know? So, which if you get big enough, you want. But anyway, so here's a change happening. Sales are declining at Morgat and other breweries that are still brewing like a dark color rustic ale. So they decided to go golden, hook back up with their friend Shea de Clark to figure out how to make the best change. And, you know, according to the book Brew Like a Monk,
fantastic book.
We've recommended it probably many times. Mm-hmm. You know, it explains that they did it by experimenting with the malting process, that they were able to make a Pilsner malt light enough. So the brewery made its own malt until 1980. It's so funny because, like, I mean, I guess I'm going to show my age here, young or old, depending who you are, but I was like born in 1986. And I feel like a brewery doing their own malt house is just such an old time thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
well, yes and no, because yeah. like, Anheuser-Busch, Coors, they all have sure. their own maltings. Yeah. But they also have their own proprietary strains or proprietary varieties of barley. Yeah. Yeah. It's not available to the regular brewers. So for a small malter, I agree with you, because it's like, when you're reading about yeah. beer history, you learn that it's like, oh, up until like the 1900s or whatever was when breweries had their own maltings. And yeah. And that's not the case. And there's a ton of breweries out there now who still malt their own barley. I guess I shouldn't say a ton. There's a handful.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree with you that it's like someplace like Morgat.
1980?
Yeah. 1980, yeah. They're still brewing their own malt.
Yeah.
Them it's, not brewing their own malt.
They are
malt. Is as old as I am.
Not old. It's that year you were born.
This is why we don't drink and record.
Okay, she has editing power, so great. I leave it up to her. Any shenanigans is on her. So here we are. They are experimenting with malt. They add dextrose sugars to help lighten the body and increase alcohol without, you know, if you have an all malt beer, which Jen said before, you're going to have a really big body beer. Like, this allows for a nice light body as well as like a crisp, dry finish. Mm-hmm. Very palatable, as Belgians might call it, very digestible. They allow for a longer maturation process. So they would ferment their beer. They would lager it for a couple of weeks, and they would bring it back up to temperature just to bottle condition it, just to get store it for another 6 weeks. But Jen's going to tell you more about the brewery process. So this Duvel at the time, or this Victory Ale, now becomes this golden straw color, you know, 3 to 6 SRM, I believe is for the style description, beer that can now compete with these other pale lagers on the market. Okay, so why don't you take it away and tell us all about brewing the style of Belgian strong golden ale.
Okay. So this is actually the specific process for brewing Duvel, and it's not necessarily the same for other styles. But one of the things I think is super interesting, and when Rachel and I were talking, kind of getting ready for the episode, that's, you know, Duvel created, or Morgott created Duvel, and it was really for a very long time kind of like Orval, where it was just its own thing. It didn't fit into the, it wasn't a monastic beer. It wasn't Brune or Blonde. It was just its own thing. And Michael Jackson, the writer, actually coined the style strong golden ale. And in his Great Beers of Belgium book says, like, talks about Duvel and is like, yeah, it doesn't really fit into any style guidelines. And so the BJCP, I'm guessing, took that, you know, him categorizing, like, here's Duvel and here's all of these other beers who that have been created to be like Duvel, and created that Belgian golden strong ale category. So I think that's really cool of just like, you know, it, and when you read it in his book, he says, like, it doesn't fit in into any style.
Yeah.
And then, but there's also all of these other beers that are similar to it. And so that's how the Belgian golden strong ale got created, which is also why, like, there's not a style for Orval. Orval is just Orval because nobody else is
how badass is that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, nobody else has dared.
But that's a very Belgian thing to do, right? Like, this is the beer that we brew, and this is the beer that we brew. If you Americans want to put it to styles, go ahead.
Exactly. Exactly. So with Duvel specifically, it is French and Belgian Chiro summer barley, saaz and Syrian goldings. Like Rachel said, it has dextrose added to it. But what I think is so interesting about Duvel, and this is still the way that it's made today, is that they have those yeast strains that Rachel talked about that they isolated from McEwen Scotch Ale. They use two different yeast strains in primary fermentation. But what they do is every beer they brew, they divide it into two unequal sizes of batches. And one batch gets one yeast strain and the other batch gets the other yeast strain.
Makes sense. That's the blend they want.
Right. But what's really interesting is that in all everything that Michael Jackson has written, he doesn't say, like, when I read it, it kind of comes across as like, sometimes it's just like splash beer over here, splash beer over here. Like all that matters is that it's not equal, where I'm sure it's more like, okay, like, 2.5 barrels goes into this fermenter.
Absolutely.
And like 1.3 barrels goes into, or whatever.
Yeah. As a brewer, I could tell you that's absolutely correct.
Right. But yes, like you read it and you romanticize it and you think of them like with kind of like a fire hose being like, okay, that's enough of this one. Top this one up. But then they add
one. Can you imagine the brew day? The Instagram reels you get from that.
The TikToks. Yeah. But they add one of each of those yeast strains to each batch. And after primary fermentation, the two batches are blended together. So the whole process for Duvel is very intricate and very much specific to Morgott for brewing. So it's not like every Belgian golden strong ale is like this, but it goes through three different fermentations. And storage, like Rachel said, is a very, very important part of the process. So everything is bottle conditioned, like Rachel said, and the bottle conditioning is usually like more dextrose and one of the yeast strains. And in Michael Jackson's writings, he doesn't specify if it's always the same yeast strain.
Yeah.
Or if they're like, okay, this batch gets this one gets this one. I would imagine it's probably the same one every time, but the bottle conditioning takes 10 to 14 days and they then stabilize it for another 5 to 6 weeks before it even gets shipped out.
Yeah.
So it's almost like it goes through this lagering process. And if you're in or around Brussels and you drive by the brewery, I remember driving by this when we were in Belgium, when you drive by Morgott, they have this big sign on the side of the building that translated into English says, "Shh, Duvel is ripening." but it says it in Belgian. And I remember, or Flemish, and I remember driving by and like slapping everyone in the car to be like, there it is. There's the thing. There is, it actually says that on the side of the building. Yeah. Like,
everyone be quiet.
Yeah, exactly.
As but they like let it out.
Right. They let it stabilize for like 5 to 6 weeks. And Michael Jackson also says that most like Duvel drinkers, and granted, this is like 1993 Duvel drinkers, will let their Duvel set for like another 3 weeks before they drink it to like to make sure that it's conditioned. Okay, so let's wrap up with talking a little bit about the BJCP guidelines and what you should expect.
Yes.
With a Belgian Golden Strong Ale, because each one of them are different. And I'm drinking the Delirium Tremens right now, and I'm really surprised by like how like banana forward it is. So when we're talking about the guidelines for Belgian Golden Strong Ale, with Belgian Golden Strong, with triple, even with Saison, it's really interesting to do side-by-sides. I would say that something like a Belgian Golden Strong Ale and a Hefeweizen are probably like the two most interesting beer styles you can do side-by-side, because there's such a wide range of interpretation that still fits within the guidelines. And Belgian Golden Strong is definitely like that. You know, like I said, with the Delirium Tremens that I have, there's a lot of isoamyl acetate, that banana flavor, that it's kind of surprised me when I drank it.
Yeah.
But it's still very much a Belgian flavor. It's just an interpretation of a Belgian Golden Strong. So, you know, like we talked about, you've got the malt that is kiln to a very, very pale color, really to approximate a Pilsner. Because we're going back into, you know, to 1970, where everything was macro lager, and everything still is macro lager, but, you know, customers are wanting that really pale gold, yellow beer. So it's going to be yellow to gold with excellent clarity, high carbonation, like Rachel said, that long lasting, rocky, clean white head that ask anyone who has ever tried to give you a blind sample of a Belgian Golden Strong, and they curse that they had to pour that for you because it has this huge head that lasts a long time, then immediately gives it away. And then of course you'll have that beautiful Belgian lace on the glass. So for the aroma and the flavor, you're going to expect some subtle malt. That's going to, again, since it's kilned very low, you're going to have kind of bread flour, bread dough, sort of a grassy flavor. And you're going to, the esters are really going to be the star of the show when it comes to a Belgian Golden Strong. And those are going to be orange, apple, pear, banana. You might have some levels of spice, some floral hops, and you're going to have, there are still going to be some phenolics to it that are going to be subtle. You would expect like that spicy, peppery kind of phenolics, but not... In my experience, the Belgian Golden Strong is going to be more of like a fruit forward.
Yes.
Like ester forward impression, whereas something like a triple is going to be a little more like a little bit more
white pepper.
Yeah. And a little bit more phenolic forward. And again, we're kind of diverting because we've been drinking, but I really, really do encourage you to try a blind tasting with a Belgian Golden Strong and a triple, at least if you want to throw a Saison in. That is, you know, the more the merrier. It's very challenging, and don't feel bad if you get them mixed up, because it is incredibly challenging, even in a blind tasting, to taste all of them side by side and really kind of parse out, but especially between a triple and a Belgian Golden Strong, there is so much overlap that it's really a difficult exercise. But, you know, we've talked about this a few times, and if you can't already tell, one of the biggest hallmarks of the Belgian Golden Strong is the alcohol level. So it can be 7.5% to 10.5%. And if it's a very good Belgian Golden Strong, it does not taste like that. And, you know, I think if you're listening to this, you've probably had a beer that's a 10% that tastes like a 10% beer. This, you know, these kinds of beer styles absolutely do not. So that, again, that's kind of where the devil reference comes from, is it tastes delicious. It's very light bodied. It's very dry. So all of those kinds of hallmarks that you would typically use to tell you that you're drinking a high ABV beer are absent. So you can definitely feel the ABV without tasting the ABV. So with that, I feel that. Yeah. If you can't, if you all can't tell,
I'm making funny faces.
You definitely feel it. So thank you everyone. If you've listened this far, I don't know how interesting it is to,
I think it's one of the best
progressively get more inebriated.
I was so excited about this style. I was like very excited to, you know, I left this amazing TV show I was watching and I got this excited about Doolittle. So
yeah,
if that tells you anything, go drink high ABV beers. It makes you very excited.
Yeah. Yes. So thank you everyone for joining us for this bonus episode on Belgian Golden Strong Ale. Again, this is exclusively for our Patreon community. And of course, we thank you for the additional support you give us each month. And for March, we are going almost in the exact opposite. Well, no, actually, it's not in the exact opposite direction. For March, we'll be talking about American lagers.
What?
So
I know she asked me and we approved this, but I don't remember. So it's news to me too. All right.
So yes, for March, our style episode will be American Lager. And as always, you are welcome to grab that style and taste along with us. But thank you everyone for your continued support. We appreciate it. And you know all the places to find us, your Patreon community. Listen, if any of you brew a Belgian Golden Strong and entered into a homebrew competition as a Belgian Golden Strong Ale, I need to know.
Okay. How about I just do that for World Beer Cup?
But it will be read aloud.
Yes. That's not a good look. I want to
World Beer Cup. Yeah. I understand the spirit behind it is like lulls, but then like to actually go up and receive a medal for a Belgian Gordon Strong Ale would be like, we're Gordon Strong super fans.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to do that. This is a bad look.
That's the point.
I don't like it. Sorry, I even thought of it.
This has been False Bottom Girls.
And we make the brewing world go round.